Ahoy! You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Krem. Today is a double whammy with Mackenzie Patel and Joe Dillon. Mackenzie is the senior revenue accountant at Figment, and Joe is director of customer and partner success at Bitwave. The topic is one near and dear to every crypto degen's heart: DeFi, NFTs, and taxes. How is the IRS handling everything? Short answer is not well. Listen for the long answer. Enjoy. Welcome one and all. Hopefully you had some good conversations. Some of you might be very confused what the hell is going on. So here's what's going on. This is Diffuse Tap. We do this every week. This is 123rd version of it. We're going to briefly talk about Diffuse Tap, the event where you are, and then Diffuse and why we do this. Then we're going to do a fireside chat with Mackenzie and Joe, who you'll learn more about in a second. And then you do two more rounds of breakout rooms, kind of similar to what you just did, because this is mostly a networking event. So right there. So about 45 minutes or hour together is networking in groups of 4, 5, 6, whatever it ends up being. But we do like you to have a little bit of wisdom coming out of it. So that's why we have folks like Mackenzie and Joe for the inside section for 15 minutes. If you do like this sort of thing, the networking in particular, next week on October 13th in Chicago, Jerry is hosting an in-person version of this. No Mackenzie, no Joe, but there will be drinks. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. So if you're in the area, come check it out. Why do we do this? Well, Diffuse is a fund platform. So we spin up funds for alternative investment strategies, primarily focused on digital assets. One is a DeFi market neutral yield farming strategy, this one. And then the other one is actually an index fund that we're in the process of listing. Hopefully you'll be able to buy it in Robinhood by the end of the year, but you know, FINRA. So we're going through that whole process. If you have any interest in either of those, please do let us know. But on that note, we are going to introduce our speakers. And I say we because I'm terrible at it. But Mackenzie, would you mind unmuting yourself? Give the good folks a little of your background and what you're up to.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Mackenzie Patel. I'm a senior revenue accountant at Figment. I'm also CPA. I've been at Figment for just about over a year. And my specialty and my focus really is on crypto tax and accounting.
By far the most concise introduction. I love it. Thank you very much. Joe, would you mind doing similarly?
Sure. Yeah. I'm Joe Dillon. So I'm the director of customer and partner success at Bitwave. We are an enterprise digital asset accounting and tax platform. And I work with Mackenzie and the Figment team very regularly. So I came over to Bitwave about a year ago after spending 12 years in public accounting. So I'm also a CPA. So I look at a lot of what we do at Bitwave through that CPA lens.
Phenomenal. I will start putting everybody on the spot immediately. What is the core difference between regular taxes and all things crypto taxes? And feel free to toss in some news and updates that might have happened this year from the IRS when it comes to these taxes. Maybe I'll start out with Mackenzie.
Sure. Yeah. So I think crypto taxes, and then we can get into DeFi taxes specifically, are so different than the ordinary taxes that we're used to. And so going to DeFi, I think the way because it's so challenging, there's so many different types of activities that are involved in DeFi taxes, right? You've got wrapping assets, you have bridging assets, there's liquidity providing, protocol staking, lending, like liquid staking, all these kinds of things. So I just think the variety and the different types of activity are so much more complex than we've seen before. It's much more complex just getting like a W-2 from your employer and putting that on your 1040, right? These are different types of activities that we haven't really seen before. At least we haven't seen, you know, except in the last couple of years. And so I think that's kind of the first challenge that we have there. Secondly, I think it's related to, you know, these activities being so complex is getting data to track them all. And so being able to get data related to all your liquidity providing positions, for example, is difficult because there's not a lot of block explorers or indexing for a lot of these new protocols. And so it's really hard to know like how your position has changed relative to the pool in its entirety. And so I think that's a really big thing within crypto itself, not just within DeFi, is getting data to track all your activity. It's just very difficult right now. We're still in the nascent phase of this industry. And so, of course, it's very necessary for taxes, but it might not always be as accessible as you'd like it to be.
Yeah, I'll add to that. Almost like from an even more like basic standpoint, when I think about, you know, crypto taxes, I think part of the struggle is that like the IRS doesn't care about like your crypto denominated amounts you traded. Everything has to be converted back to fiat. So like to US dollars. So it's like they don't They don't care that you sold two ETH. How much was it worth in US dollars? So the taxpayer has this task of taking every single transaction that happens and needing to price it accurately into US dollars. And we all know, if you follow the crypto space at all, like pricing can be volatile at times. And because of how the IRS considers, you know, how they classify digital assets and cryptocurrencies, you know, it's treated as like property. So anytime you dispose of it, you have a taxable event. So, you know, and that means anytime you dispose of it. It doesn't mean if you sold a digital asset, well, then you're going to have a taxable event. But also if you just use it. So if you just use it and for a transaction fee, well, they're going to say, well, that's a disposal. You have a gain or loss on that disposal. If you use it for, you know, you pay an employee in it, well, that's a disposal. You're going to have a realized gain or loss on that disposal. So it's sort of like this combination of like the difficulty of exactly what Mackenzie said of like getting your data. Cause like, oh, by the way, the Ethereum network doesn't send you a 1099. So it's like, you have to get your transaction data. Then you've got to price it. You've got to track it all, like, you know, super closely. And you have all of these like events that are now taxable events that for most people in the regular day-to-day life, they're just not, you know, coming across.
Yeah, but I think volume's also at play too. You might have thousands of transactions that you then had to download, price, and then just to dig into pricing a little bit, that is a big pain point within crypto. Because what if you're on like a new platform or a new blockchain where there's not really pricing for the assets that you're trading in? Then you have to go and, you know, find it or, you know, do some sort of labor cost analysis. So pricing is definitely a big issue because, as Joe said, the IRS is not going to accept your taxes in denominated in ETH or Bitcoin. So that's definitely a nuance there.
Yeah, the volume thing is huge. Like crypto does like allow, like myself, like I have like thousands of transactions and I'm not even like, you know, it's like so easy to happen over the course of like years or months. It's like, it's just, there's something, the frictionlessness that I think attracts a lot of people to cryptocurrencies is what can drive like a ton of that volume, making the tracking that much more difficult.
Okay, that totally makes sense. And so a lot of what you're talking about so far is kind of that, hodling, like buying, selling. There's a whole other area, and this is kind of picking up on Neil's question. Oh, by the way, everybody, feel free to chuck any questions in the chat if we have time. We'll try to pick them up. But what about like DeFi? That's a whole different thing. There's like this concept of rewards. Is that interest? Is that capital gains? How's the IRS looking at it? And how is that different than just, I'm going to buy Bitcoin and hope it goes to the moon? Joe, maybe we'll start with you this time.
Here's the thing. I'm going to go to Mackenzie because this is like staking, rewards, fee income. This is like when I have questions, I go to Mackenzie for it. So I'm going to cue her up now. Mackenzie, I hope you don't mind. I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, no, not at all. Thanks, Joe. Yeah. So just to start with like the holding. So if you buy Bitcoin and you hold it for a number of years. So if you buy with fiat, there's actually no tax implications because you're just buying it and then you're hodling it, you're holding it. So no taxes there, but there is a nuance with that. So let's say that you're holding this asset, but then a hard fork occurs, right? So think of like Ethereum, it just moved from proof of work to proof of stake. That was actually a soft fork, but then there was another hard fork that occurred that is Ethereum proof of work or ETHW. And so even though you might just be holding Ethereum, you might be airdropped some of these new assets from the hard fork. And in that case, that is taxable because the IRS says that airdrops are taxable as ordinary income. And so even though you're just holding, you might still have a taxable event just because you held an asset and there's a hard fork that occurred. So that's a new wrinkle there, I guess. If you just wanted to hold your crypto and not pay any taxes on it, you might not.
Yeah. And if I could add to that as like either, well, this is true for individuals and businesses. I think part of that difficulty is when you get that data, like, again, this is not an account statement. So you're looking back at your transactions from last year, you received some tokens. The only record you might have of that transaction is like on Etherscan somewhere. And Etherscan doesn't tell you like, hey, just a reminder, you got these tokens for this. So it can be really difficult trying to, because you really do kind of go back to like the first principles of like, what is the thing? Did I receive this as, is it, Is it income from trading, right? Which is going to be like, you know, capital gain and loss. Is it ordinary income, like what Mackenzie was talking about with some fee revenue or some airdrop revenue? You know, you really kind of got to go back to like, well, what is it actually for? What was it for? And remembering that stuff across large volume, you know, going back in time becomes very difficult.
Exactly. Nice. Just another note. Another note on the airdrop. So I would just be cognizant of like, did you just receive the airdrop? Did it just land in your wallet, or did you actually have to claim it? So you do have some agency depending on if you can claim it or not. Because if you don't claim it, you can delay the taxes. But if you just like, if it dropped in your wallet, then kind of like too bad, you got the asset, you might be taxed on it.
That's hilarious. You can do nothing, just buy and hold, and you still have a tax implication. And it's even better because a lot of these airdrops are scams. So you have to go figure out what it is and what the value is, and you might get hacked along the way. So that's, you know, a double whammy. But, and I'll go back to you, Mackenzie, DeFi, how's that different? How does staking rewards win? What is staking? Feels like a term that's thrown around a lot. Are there different types of staking? How are they treated? You know, please DeFi it up.
Yeah, there's definitely different types of staking. So I'll start with the one I'm most familiar with, which is protocol staking. That's what Figment does. So you stake your assets on a blockchain and then you earn staking rewards for essentially locking up your assets. And so even just within that, like protocol staking, which is one subset, you could say, of DeFi, there's controversy around like, are these staking rewards taxed? Are they not taxable? I've seen arguments both ways. Some people are like, yes, they're taxable as ordinary income when you actually receive them. Some people say, no, it's not taxable because it's more akin to like a stock split. So they're not taxed until you actually dispose of them, sell them, trade them, like do something with them essentially. And so even just within that one category, like you have different opinions that you have. There's also like DeFi or like liquidity providing staking. So you lock up or you put your assets into a pool, you get an LP token back, and you stake that LP token, and then you continually earn rewards on that LP token. And so those are definitely taxable. Read a lot of articles about that. Taxable as ordinary income when you actually receive the asset. So that's a little bit more clear than the protocol staking that I just talked about. So I call it like liquidity providing staking. Yes, taxable. Then you also have liquid staking, which is a little bit different. So I think of like Lido, for example. You put in ETH, you get STE back, and then you also earn rewards in STE. And again, it could be taxable, it could be not taxable. There's not really a lot of clear guidance on this. It kind of just depends like what position do you want to take and at what point do you think you've realized like has there been an accession to wealth or a realization event?
Yeah, to add to that, like you just said, like to me, what is like the most important thing, which is like there is not like regulatory clarity here. This is still very much a gray area. So I think what we see, I think in the accounting space is really like all accounting issues. We see folks taking very aggressive tax positions and some folks taking a more conservative, you know, approach. I think if you like maybe in this past year, like that issue of staking income, when do I have to recognize the revenue? Is it literally when I receive it, when it hits my wallet? Or, you know, there was a really public case with the IRS and a taxpayer, like the Jarrett case, if you want to look it up, where essentially the IRS settled. And the argument that the Jarretts were making is like, hey, these staking rewards I received, so I lock up my assets in this protocol, I got back some tokens, you know. What the IRS was saying is like, hey, those are ordinary income. So you need to, when you receive them, you recognize that income. Then they made the case that it's more akin to taxpayer created property in the same way that if you were to bake a loaf of bread, when the bread is done in the oven, you don't record income, right? You wait to record the income until you sell the loaf of bread. And that was the case that the Jarretts were making, was like, hey, this is taxpayer created property. I shouldn't have to recognize any income on it until I sell it. And the IRS, they settled that case. Like they settled it. So I think at first when that news came out, everyone's like, oh my gosh, this means that staking rewards are taxpayer, you know, created property. That is not true. They did not actually like opine on that. They have not given guidance. They just settled a case, you know what I mean, out of court. That's what they did. But, you know, certainly people are reading between the lines of like what that might mean for the future. And I think it is like distinctions like that of like how to handle staking, you know, this DeFi income that you receive. I think in coming legislation, I think that we'll see that addressed. I think that's got to be pretty high up on the list.
Etty, I might toss another question your way in that case. When it comes to being a little bit more tax efficient with your investing, are there any suggestions that you guys might make for folks that are just thinking about how should they plan out their portfolio? This year's post, obviously, but you might make a do a better job next year. What are the kinds of things that one could do in order to be a bit more tax efficient?
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely some things. I think one is these are taxed like capital property, right? So we do have this distinction between long-term gains, which is, you know, property that's been held for more than 12 months versus short-term gains. And just to make it easy on the listeners here, it's your long-term tax rate is typically lower than your short-term tax rate because your short-term gains are going to be taxed at whatever your ordinary income rate is, where there's a more of a preferential lower rate for long-term. So one, you can think about your holdings and just know that holding them for a longer period of time will all before you dispose of them, before you sell them, will often result in a smaller tax liability. Now, to do that, you have to track your stuff, right? You actually have to track your holdings, how long you've been holding. Okay, if I bought this, you know, this is this lot, you know, we could go really deep into like the mechanics of that. It's really difficult to do as an individual. Like, you know, we see a lot of folks trying to do it in Excel and it gets really hard. And then, I mean, there's a few different strategies here. I'll let Mackenzie talk about a couple of them. I'll say one more, which is wash sale rules don't apply to cryptocurrencies right now, which is like a huge thing, especially in a year like this year where prices are down. And what that means is that, you know, there are rules, like if you're trading regular securities like equities, that if I bought it for $1,000 and now the price is 200, I could, in theory, sell my asset for $200, lock in that $800 loss, and then just rebuy it for $200. Now, they have rules to kind of prevent people from doing that. You know, it's called like a wash sale, but those rules do not apply to cryptocurrencies. So you can do that for if you're holding Bitcoin, if you're holding ETH, if you're holding any token that you purchased when it was much more expensive. You can literally sell those assets, lock in a loss, and rebuy them 1 minute later. And now you've captured a really large loss, which is, you know, again, you want to be a little strategic here if you want to do that when in a year, maybe when you have some gains to offset. But that's a big strategy we see people doing.
And I think it's really interesting that that's the item that crypto sort of excluded from the wash sale rules, because it's so easy to actually carry out like a wash sale within crypto. But going back to the capital gains and losses that you mentioned, so yeah, definitely opt for the capital losses. I definitely recommend looking at your portfolio near the end of the year and see, are there any positions that you have that are in the loss that you're willing to realize? Because then you can use those capital losses to offset capital gains. So if you have short-term capital losses, it'll offset the short-term gains first, and then it goes to long-term gains. And so you can take up to $3,000 capital loss and deduct that, and then you can just carry that forward indefinitely. So really good rules around that. And as Joe mentioned, better to have long-term positions because you can have lower tax rates with that. But, you know, it's October now, getting close to the end of the year. So I really just recommend looking at your portfolio. Is there anything that's a loss position they can realize and then take that loss and carry it forward potentially?
Yes. And there's, I was just going to add one more thing. There is one caveat on that wash sale rule, which is like, it's going to go away. Like, I mean, like it is going to go away. It's because it's kind of like this loophole, right? And it has to do with how cryptocurrencies are classified as property, right? If they were classified as securities, you wouldn't be able to do it. So we're either going to get some new rules that say, hey, some of these are securities and commodities, which means you're not going to be able to do it. And the other thing is, like, I think it was in the original draft of the Build Back Better bill that didn't pass. I think they had a piece in there to close this loophole, but it didn't pass. So like, to me, it's like this waiting game of like, we are going to get legislation soon to close that loophole.
That's hilarious. All right. So we've talked a couple of times, and one last question, and then we got to go be quick with the answers. We talked a little bit about there's kind of choices, and this is clearly the Wild West, right? The IRS, I'm assuming, doesn't like some of these things because it's, I can see why. What's the risk of doing these types of, we have a fund, should we go, you know, it's this down because it's an index fund, should we do that right now? And is the IRS going to come back? And we'll pick up some of the themes from the questions here in the chat. Is that uncertainty driving people offshore? they don't want to deal with that risk of the IRS coming in and just completely, you know, smacking everybody's hands who did it for, you know, 5 years and had to pay a big, big bill. Maybe McKinsey, do you have thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think definitely. I know just like within Figment, I'm hearing a lot about like Cayman entities or like Cayman Foundation entities. I think that is driving people offshore because people don't want to have risky investments where it's super uncertain, especially if you can't even like get the reporting to back up your position. And so, yeah, I think that is driving, you know, people offshore. But I don't know, at the same time, I think the technology will develop and products like Bitwave and like other crypto accounting softwares are making it easier to track your DeFi activity. And so I think once those get better and people actually have visibility into their activity, then I think they'll be less likely to go offshore because there's more certainty in like their actual activity. And then once the regulation catches up, then I think, again, like people will get more comfortable with it. So I think it'll take some time. I think it will mature.
Joe, anything to add?
A quick note. So like if you're an individual taxpayer filing your taxes, if you have unreported stuff, maybe you should, statute of limitations for the IRS is 3 years. So they got 3 years to go back and see like, okay, what do you have that you didn't report? But the thing people forget is if you don't file, they can go back forever. So if you just like literally haven't filed, there is no statute of limitations to how far back they can go. So, you know, and to remind a lot of people think like, hey, the IRS isn't competent enough to like find all this stuff. They can hire outside professionals to assist them. Just keep that in mind.
All right. Well, we've learned a lot of interesting strategies, and definitely, even if you do a blank tax return, put in a tax return if you're going to take some of these aggressive stances. Hilarious. But we're going to do what most of you or a lot of you are here for, which is breakout rooms, a couple of housekeeping items. It's not a pitch session. It's a networking session. So let's be respectful of that and each other. Be kind. I don't know why I have to say that, but it's unfortunate, but it's a thing. There is no big participant list at the end of this for privacy reasons. So if you meet somebody you want to connect with, best bets just to swap details then and there. You can also join our Telegram group, links in the chat, and we'll be in a follow-up email. Introduce yourself, ask for something. Community is great, especially when it comes to networking, because, well, that's why a lot of you are here. Ayla?
All right, let's pop you all into rooms. I'll give you a question to talk about, but don't feel beholden to that question. What have you guys done about your taxes? Are you using any tools that are helping you scrape all of your positions together? Have you found a phenomenal tax partner that just nails it every year? What are your tricks and tips to get your taxes done in the crypto world? I'll pop you into rooms now and we'll see you back here in 10 minutes.
Oh, and Joe and McKenzie, a warning. The question is always the same in between breakout rooms, which is tell us the future. What's coming down the pipe? What do you see happening? Maybe something that other people are not aware of.
Oh, easy.
So start thinking about that.
Thanks.
All right. Welcome back, one and all. Friendly reminder, please do stay muted in the big room here. Otherwise, it gets, well, annoying. I don't know. But anyways, one thing that was put in the chat, which I think is worth raising, the three-year statute of limitations does not apply, according to Squeeze Taxes, if they found you acted fraudulently. So if some of you are have interesting ideas going through your head, please do keep that in mind. But Joe, to you, please tell us the future as threatened.
You know, I think the future, one thing, I don't know what the specifics will be, but we're going to get regulation. There's a ton of bills right now in Congress that they're chewing on, and it'll go through that whole process. It'll take a long time, but we're going to get regulation as it relates to taxes. And so I think right now we are in this very like gray area where it feels like applying regular accounting and tax rules to this feels like square peg round hole. I think the future I see, now I don't know what they're going to say. They've sort of like given hints at what they might choose to regulate, but regulation is coming. And I think for a lot of people from the outside who aren't super familiar with crypto, thinks like, oh, everyone in crypto doesn't want that. I'll tell you, like the companies I work with and for, they want it so bad. We want regulatory clarity. So I would say that is coming, hopefully soon.
Awesome. Regulation on the way. McKinsey, what you got?
Sure. I think mine's more of an accounting prediction, but the FASB, they put digital assets on our technical agenda. And so I think we're going to see some new like accounting standards codification guidance related to digital assets, because right now they're indefinite life intangible assets. But I think the FASB is going to come out with like a totally different asset class, like for digital assets, that comes with its own suite of rules and like how to account for them, like what's the revenue recognition associated with them. So I think we're going to get like a whole different set of rules as Joe said, like round hole square peg. So it just doesn't really fit, you know, the current guidance that we have. So I think we're going to get more. And I'm personally excited because it's so hard to try to relate like normal accounting to digital assets. So I think it's going to be good.
All right. That's exciting. We will hopefully no longer be groping through the dark in the not too distant future. Well, maybe distant future. Who knows? Ayla, are you here? I don't see you.
Dark for some reason. Oh, there we are.
Yep. Okay. Cool. Are you ready with...
Yep. I certainly am. I will pop you into rooms now. Don't be holding any of my questions. Just talk about whatever you want. That said, regulatory crystal balls are always interesting. If anybody has any ideas or insights, I know Pat Doherty is on the line and he usually has good ideas of these things. And what might happen from an IRS perspective in the next 12 months. Feel free to chat away. See you back here just before the hour.
Awesome sauce. Welcome back, one and all. We're going to do a quick wrap up and let you all go right at the top of the hour. If I can find the slide. Yes. This is weekly. Come next week and we'll be talking about CFTC. That is one of those regulatory bodies that is kind of trying to take control of the crypto environment. It is, if you think the IRS is mad or is crazy, SEC CFTC fight over crypto is a whole another rabbit hole that we didn't touch on today. Next week, 13th, Jerry, Chicago, this in person, words. And please do join the Telegram group. The link's in the chat and will be in the follow-up email. Ms. Krem, any talking points that we wanted to do today?
No, nothing else. But if there's anybody who's keen to host an event, someone just ping me about LA or San Francisco events. If anyone wants to host, we're very happy to support you in that.
And by support, I mean we'll buy a round of drinks for pretty cheap. On that note, Joe and Mackenzie, where can people find you? Plug things. You heard plug things. Bitwave.
Sure.
I guess I'll go first with Figment. You can find us on figment.io. That's our website. Twitter's figment_io. And if you want to contact me, you can just reach out via email, just mackenzie@figment.io.
Thank you. Yeah. And Joe?
Yeah, I work at Bitwave. We're bitwave.io. So you can find us there. I'm joe.dillon@bitwave.io. You can find me on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I'm not too hard to find. So thank you, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time and your words of wisdom. And thank you, everybody, for, you know, showing up. It doesn't work without you guys doing that. So we'll see you next week and have a good just shy 7 days.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of 4 or 5. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.